Trade Bites. Trade Bites. The podcast about trade policy.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Trade Bites, the podcast series by the Centre for Inclusive Trade Policy, and hosted by me, Chris Horseman, Deputy Editor of the Trade Policy News Service, Borderlex. Trade Bites is the podcast series that leaves no stone unturned in its quest for enlightenment on that deep mystery that is UK trade policy. And in today's episode, we're going to be focusing on Britain's accession to the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement on Trans-Pacific Partnership, or CPTPP, to use its almost equally unpronounceable abbreviation. Since 2018, this agreement has reduced trade barriers among its 11 founder members, all of whom are located around the Pacific Rim. But at some point towards the end of this year, the UK is set to become the CPTPP's first new member state, thus bringing a whole new meaning to the expression regional trade agreement. The British government has made no secret of its enthusiasm for what it calls a strategic pivot towards the Asia-Pacific region. It's a dynamic part of the world which is experiencing strong economic growth. But does it make sense for the UK, which has just withdrawn from one trade bloc right on its doorstep, to join another which is centred on the other side of the world? Is this a sensible strategic step for the UK? Or perhaps it's a distraction from other trade priorities closer to home? And how might CPTPP evolve in future, both in terms of its content and the countries which might emulate the UK in joining the bloc? Well, to discuss these and other questions, we've brought together three experts to share their own perspectives and considerable expertise in this area. I'm joined by Miniko Morita Jaeger, Senior Research Fellow in International Trade at the University of Sussex and a Research Fellow of the Centre for Inclusive Trade Policy. It's a great pleasure to welcome Rob Cook, who is Deputy Director for CPTPP at the UK Department for Business and Trade. And a big welcome too to Manuel Tong, Research Fellow in the Economics of Trade at the Centre for Inclusive Trade Policy. Thanks to all of you for being with us today. Rob, if I can start with you, what is the current status of the UK's bid to accede to CPTPP? What still needs to happen before the UK becomes a fully fledged member?
So we signed our accession protocol to CPTPP in July of last year. And that actually makes us a CPTPP member, but not yet a fully ratified party. So while we're a member, we're already participating in all CPTPP meetings, taking part in discussions, commenting on documents and so on. But to have formal powers as a party and for businesses to be able to start using the agreement, we need to have that full ratified status. And there are two elements to that. One, we as the UK have to deposit a formal instrument of accession once we've completed all our own internal legislative procedures. And we also need enough of the CPTPP parties to confirm that they've done the same and completed their own internal processes. On the UK side, we're well on track. We've had to pass a bill through the UK Parliament. We've done so successfully. There's a few other elements we need to bring together, but I hope that that will happen in the coming months. And then in terms of the other parties, we need a sufficient number of them to ratify our accession for entry into force of the agreement to happen. And it's a little bit complicated, but essentially we need six CPTPP parties to ratify to get us formally into the club. And we're seeing good progress on that side too. So I hope, all going well, that we're going to see the agreement entering into force for the UK by the end of this year. That will make us a fully fledged party to the agreement. In terms of those market access agreements that we've made with each of the CPTPP parties, those enter into force between the UK and each country that has ratified at that point in time. So if some haven't ratified by the end of the year, then those benefits will come into place when those countries ratify as well.
Miniko, what originally motivated the UK to seek a regional trade agreement with 11 countries on the other side of the world?
Originally, the CPTPP was motivated by the Global Britain agenda after the UK left the EU to recoup trade losses created by leaving the EU, which is UK's largest trade partner, both in terms of goods trade and service trade. the UK needs to boost trade with non-EU countries. So as ambition of concluding an FTA with the US faded, joining the CPTPP became number one priority of the UK government's FTA project. So this is mainly because the Asia-Pacific region can be seen as a world growth engine, which is generating 40% of global GDP, with some of the fastest growing economies, and then half of the world's population. The Integrated Review 2023, following that 2021 version, the UK government reaffirmed the importance of the Indo-Pacific tilt, for which the CPTPP comprises a core policy framework. The UK government seeks to enhance strategic ties with like-minded countries to protect a free and open Indo-Pacific region.
Okay, so Manuel, what are we signed up to? What does CPTPP membership actually commit the UK to? What benefits do we derive? What concessions are we going to have to make?
Joining the CPTPP, like any other typical free trade agreement, involves the UK opening their market, allowing zero tariff access to products from all the other 11 CPTPP members, as well as access for products by UK firms to a wider range of potential trading partners at zero tariff. But this is usually subject to the compliance of product-specific rules of origin. Given that the CPTPP provides a standardized range of rules of origin across 11 trading partners, that would potentially benefit the performance of UK firms in those markets by reducing cost of bureaucracy by allowing the use of originating from those 11 trading partners in order to trade with these countries. However, as you were asking about a main concession from joining the CPTPP, if you remember, the UK has been signing continuity agreements with other trading partners, taking as a basis the existing bilateral agreements signed as part of the European Union. That involves the use of inputs originating from the European Union to be taken as originating in order to comply with these rules of origin. As far as we have investigated from the provisions of the CPTPP, that is not contemplated. And that in the short run could be a potential issue for UK firms in terms of integration into the supply chain. Because in a recent article we have published, the degree of integration into the supply chain between UK firms and these CPTPP members is not as large as the level of integration with our European Union trading partners and the US. So in that sense, guaranteeing zero tariff access to the CPTPP markets for firms that are used to working with inputs originating from the European Union, that could be, at least in the short run, a sort of obstacle. And also in terms of benefits, given that we have already signed some bilateral trade agreements with some of the current CPTPP members, probably the potential gains by joining CPTPP are not as large. However, there are two current CPTPP members with which the UK has not signed a bilateral trade agreement, which is Malaysia and Brunei Darussalam, which tend to have more restrictive terms of trade under the WTO rules. So in that case, that could be beneficial in terms of gaining more preferential access to two new trading partners.
Yes, I agree with Manuel. If I may, I'd like to add one important economic reality. The UK has 9 bilateral FTA with the existing CPTPP countries, except for Brunei and Malaysia, as Manuel said. And then among these countries, the 4 top CPTPP trade partners are Japan, Canada, Singapore, Australia for the UK. That count for nearly 80% of UK's trade. So of the total CPTPP members, the UK has FTA with Japan, Canada, Singapore, and Australia already. So that is, I think, a very important fact. And also the UK had tailor-made very advanced, high-quality bilateral FTA with Australia and New Zealand. So that is more advanced than CPTPP in many aspects, especially in terms of rules. So I think it was the added value in a sense, in terms of quality of rules, some parts are very limited in the CPTPP.
I just wanted to come back in on what Manuel said about the concessions that the UK had to make to join CPTPP. And I think it's fair to say, actually, they were quite limited. This is a high standards agreement, and the UK is a high standards economy and has already been referred to, has agreements with a number of these countries already. So it wasn't a great stretch for us to meet the rules of the agreement. And in terms of new market access commitments, again, there were often commitments that we'd already made to these economies. And we're a pretty liberal economy on a lot of the areas we were looking at, things like services and investment, financial services, state-owned enterprises, and so on. So there weren't really big concessions the UK had to make. And there were also key products that we made sure to protect with tariff rate quotas. So sensitive products like beef and pork, chicken, rice, and sugar, where we made sure that those would be protected by quotas. And indeed, we were pleased that the National Farmers Union recognised that the CPTPP accession was a balanced agreement that brought new opportunities for UK food and drink producers while also providing balanced protections as well.
Okay, so the UK government has stressed repeatedly that the Asia-Pacific zone is going to be one of the fastest growing regions of the world over the next 30 years or so. We've touched on this already. To what extent does that actually help the UK? I mean, will the growth in this region of the world actually help us to capitalize economically in terms of our own trade with the Asia-Pacific region? And if so, how does that actually work?
Just on the gains from the agreements to the UK, which have been touched on, so we see them as both economic and strategic. On the economic side, we're joining a group that's going to have a combined GDP of 15% of global GDP once the UK joins, more than 500 million people. So that's potentially a big market and a big opportunity. Our impact assessment suggests that our accession should bring billions of pounds of benefit to the UK economy in the long run. And we think every region of the UK should benefit from that. Manuel referred to the fact that we're getting a free trade agreement with Malaysia and Brunei for the first time. Just to put that in some concrete terms, that means our whiskey manufacturers, our car, our chocolate manufacturers seeing high tariffs cut to zero over time, and also new benefits or new protections in terms of market access certainty in areas like services, investment, and government procurement. But there are also benefits over and above the existing bilateral deals that we're getting through CPTPP as well. So I won't go into those in great detail, but we've got new opportunities for our dairy producers with Canada, Mexico, Japan, Chile. We've got new commitments on data localization from Canada, Peru, Vietnam, Mexico, Chile. So that means that UK companies won't have to set up costly servers in those countries to go about their operations, just to touch on some. So there certainly are some benefits over and above the bilateral agreements from the UK joining CPTPP. And also, as has been referred to, this is us embedding the UK increasingly in a really fast-growing region of the world, the Asia-Pacific. And you talked before about this concept of the tilt to the Indo-Pacific that the government spoke about in 2021. And things like joining CPTPP are about us strengthening and deepening that engagement. And you've certainly already got some fast-growing economies in the CPTPP agreement. We're not saying that every country in Asia-Pacific is necessarily going to join CPTPP, but this is a fast-growing region, and we think it can only be a good thing that we're embedding our economic and political relationships more deeply within it. The other key thing is that we're getting in on the ground floor, so to speak, by being the first economy to accede to CPTPP. So that means that when the agreement expands in future, and we hope that it will, the UK is going to have a key say in how that expansion happens.
Getting back to the issue of potential economic gains of CPTPP for the UK, at the UKTPO and CATP, we argued that this is rather a product-specific analysis at a product level. Given that we have recently designed analyzing the provisions from CPTPP, the content of the rules of origin, which are defined at the product level. So we have made use of a methodology, which is a restrictiveness index at the product level, which compares which products have a larger degree of restrictiveness in terms of rules of origin, which means how difficult it is for firms to comply with a product-specific rule of origin. We have recently made a comparison between CPTPP provisions and those from other bilateral trade agreements that the UK has signed, like Australia, New Zealand, and Japan, and more recently with a continuity agreement between the UK and a group of Andean countries like Peru, Colombia, and Ecuador. Even though, on average, the degree of restrictiveness of rules of origin under CPTPP tends to be larger than these other bilateral agreements, we argue that the analysis should be more sectoral and product specific, because there are some sectors in which those levels of restrictiveness are lower at CPTPP than under the other bilateral agreements. And by coincidence, those sectors are the ones in which the UK is more export intensive. So focusing, for instance, in the comparing CPTPP versus the bilateral agreement with the Andean countries, sectors like chemicals, automotive and machinery, in which the UK exports more to these Andean countries, under CPTPP, they enjoy more facilitating or less restrictive rules of origin than under the bilateral trade agreements. Whereas in other sectors in which these Andean countries are more intensive, like textile and automotive, the bilateral agreement is less restrictive. So that means that those firms would opt for exporting to the UK under the bilateral agreement rather than CPTPP. And one issue that it's worth noting is that even though the UK is joining a wider agreement like CPTPP with existing bilateral trading partners, UK firms have the faculty to choose under which terms they would like to export a product. As I was saying, UK machinery factories can choose to export to Peru under the rules of origin of CPTPP, which are less restrictive than those under the bilateral agreement with Andean countries. So as I mentioned, it's a product-specific analysis because firms from certain industries will pick either of the agreements for trading.
I think the significance of the CPTPP lies in digital and services trade. That is really the critical for the UK services exports. Basically, as far as I observe the UK Parliament discussion and so on, the economic gains from CPTPP is far below to recoup GDP loss of leaving the EU, which is 4% of GDP. That is a critical issue, which we can't forget. How to recoup these losses, and then whether the CPTPP can be the engine for recouping these losses, it's really difficult to say yes. The reason for that is, in the end, whether trading goods or trading services, a geographic proximity matter. But having said that, as Rob said, well, we really depend on the future accession, to what extent CPTPP expand in the future. So according to our analysis, if China joined the CPTPP, UK will be really greatly benefited from the accession. But the issue is that China's accession has a lot of political dilemma. And the reality is we could not see that the possibility of China's accession in the foreseeable future.
We'll come back to the accession question in just a moment. But of course, trade agreements don't always stay the same. And the CPTPP has a pre-programmed general review, which will be undertaken later this year. What changes to the agreement might that deliver? And the UK being the new kid in school, will anybody listen to us when we tell them what we would like any changes to CPTPP to look like?
Yes, so the original CPTPP agreement was always designed to be a living agreement, both in terms of expanding to new members, but also keeping the rules of the agreement under review. And so the agreement stated that there should be a general review of the agreement after a certain number of years. And the CPTPP members are now starting the process of conducting that review. The UK, I'm pleased to say, is already involved in all conversations regarding that, despite CPTPP not having formally entered into force for us yet. And we actually held a period of public engagement with stakeholders earlier this year to hear about what priorities people think the UK should have for the general review of CPTPP. And we're reviewing that very helpful input now and thinking about how the UK should approach the review process. But we were involved in shaping the terms of reference for the general review. And that certainly touches on a number of areas of UK interest and expertise. Those were published last year. So areas like digital and e-commerce, supply chain resilience, how we help businesses, particularly small and medium enterprise, utilize the CPTPP agreements, and so on. So we're really looking forward to engaging in that process. We're absolutely going to have a voice in it. We engage, though, with two points in mind. The first is that CPTPP is already a well-functioning high standards agreement. That's why we joined the deal. So we're not expecting sweeping changes to an already well-functioning agreement. And the second is that we know that agreement doesn't always come easy when you've got many countries involved. I spent 4 years in the UK mission to the World Trade Organization. So I've seen in action how challenging it can be getting a number of countries to get together and agree something. So, you know, we know that these agreements are careful balances of rights and obligations, and they aren't changed easily. So we'll, of course, be bearing that in mind as we go into the discussions as well. But I think it's really important that CPTPP is a living agreement, and it's one of the things that makes it really interesting and one of the reasons that the UK wanted to join.
It's very interesting to know, you know, what Rob said. I understand that there are two major areas. Well, the one is improving existing agreements, such as digital trade and climate change, environment, and so on. And the other one, expanding the agreement to issues more linking with trade. And as far as I see it from the existing CPTPP document, the list of areas of interest raised by CPTPP members cover a really wide range of issues. And then most of them is more expanding the scope of the CPTPP. As Rob rightly said, the CPTPP is a living agreement. So this is really the area, for example, the sustainable growth, environmental issues, including climate change and biodiversity and the labor rights, also the digital and the green economy, and then also more economic security issues such as supply chain resilience, which requires, I think, well, the, you know, wide stakeholders' participation to just reflect the, what the public think about all these trade-related issues. From that perspective, what I see from the current CPTPP system, I think a lack of transparency. We have difficulties in what the CPTPP is doing. The one reason is CPTPP does not have a secretariat, so documents are not really in the public domain, and very limited documents are available. So that, I think, is critical issues.
Okay, so we've mentioned that CPTPP could grow further in the future beyond just the UK. There are six other countries currently in the waiting room, as it were, interested in acceding to this bloc. What do you think we should expect from that process in light of the UK's accession experience? It took us quite a while to get there. Rob?
Yes, so as you said, Chris, there are six economies that have formally applied to join CPTPP: China, Costa Rica, Ecuador, Taiwan, Ukraine, and Uruguay. There are others who've expressed interest as well, but haven't applied. So countries like the Republic of Korea, Thailand, Philippines, Indonesia have at different points in time expressed potential interest in doing so. All of the CPTPP members, including the UK, have been really clear about how those applications to join are going to be judged. And it's going to be based on three criteria, which have been called the Auckland Principles, based broadly on where they were agreed. So the first criteria is that acceding economies to CPTPP have to be willing and able to meet the high standards of the agreement. And we know from our own accession that those standards are high and that they're tested rigorously by the CPTPP parties. The second principle is that they have to have a track record of compliance with their trade commitments. And the third principle is that they have to be able to command consensus of all the CPTPP members. So this is going to be a consensus process, and it's going to be discussed on that basis. And we look forward to being part of that discussion with the other members.
I think, well, that the UK's accession, it's really successful. I think that the UK set the bar for accession very high. So that, as Rob explained, the countries which would like to become a new CPTPP member have to comply with the requirement listed in the agreed among the CPTPP members. Then it comes to the question of China. To what extent is China serious about its accession to CPTPP? There are two observations among trade experts looking at China. And the one group said Well, China is very much serious about its accession to CPTPP. According to their observation, China has been preparing for its accession for many years and they're trying to use the CPTPP as the leverage of promoting domestic reforms. The other group of experts see that China is just trying to unite the CPTPP members. Roughly speaking, there are two types of CPTPP members. One is highly developed economy and standing on the democratic value, which is Australia, Canada, Japan, and New Zealand. And among these, Australia, Canada, and Japan are close allies of the US. So they are very sensitive with the China's geopolitical strategy and then presence of this existing the US-China hegemonic rivalry. And once the UK joins CPTPP, I see that the UK will be aligned with these like-minded countries. Others are emerging economies that would like to maximize economic benefits from China. So they keep some distance from the G7's the political economic position against China, including economic security. So what I'd like to say is that UK sets the high bar to become the CPTPP member, but strictly following the rule of the accession process of the CPTPP, I observe the China's acceding CPTPP is not straightforward.
So Rob, as a civil servant, of course, we won't be asking you to comment on the accession prospects of any particular country. Manuel, I was wondering what your view is.
In our recent briefing paper, we have classified those potential CPTPP members, and out of the 10 potential new members, with four of them, the UK doesn't have a current bilateral free trade agreement, such as China, Taiwan, Thailand, and Uruguay. And economically speaking, one potential accession of China, which accounts for a great share of supply chain integration with the UK, would be particularly beneficial from the economic point of view. Whereas other potential CPTPP members like South Korea, Costa Rica, Ecuador, and Colombia, we've already got some bilateral agreements from our previous EU membership. And on the other hand, we have countries like Indonesia and Philippines, which have expressed their interest, for which the UK has a unilateral preferential treatment under the GSP and the DCTS, which in case of these countries joining CPTPP, then that preferential treatment will be bilateral. And if you allow me, I just wanted to get back to a previous point when Rob was talking about this issue of reviewing periodically the terms of the CPTPP. In our recent study comparing CPTPP with the Andean Agreement, there is one particular section we were interested in, which is government procurement and SMEs. And we have found that CPTPP is particularly proactive in promoting the participation of SMEs in government procurement to such an extent that, for instance, in the Peruvian terms are more generous in terms of the minimum threshold at which firms from the UK can participate in government procurement. And those thresholds are periodically renegotiated every 2 years. So I think one issue of particular interest for UK firms to make the most of CPTPP with more distant trading partners like Peru or any other potential Andean country joining would be particularly important.
So we've covered quite a lot of ground on the basics of the UK's accession to CPTPP. One question I'd like to ask each of you as we draw towards closing our podcast, the impact which you think CPTPP membership might have on the UK in the coming years, sort of politically, economically, culturally. Is the UK going to become a more Asia-Pacific kind of country in terms of the way it does business, the way it does trade? Or will we still very much be a European country and our economic anchor still be here within Europe? What difference do you think it'll make to sort of mindsets and approaches to trade and economic questions? Manuel, perhaps I could come to you first. What's your view?
Well, if we economically focus on how the UK will behave in the future, given CPTPP membership, I think I have mentioned that in the short run, it could be a bit problematic because it will involve further adaption of UK firms in terms of the supply chain engagement. Given the proximity that Minako has mentioned, lots of UK firms get their input supplies from closer countries like the European Union. And if they are targeting in the future the CPTPP or Asia Pacific markets, then they will have to be involved in an adaption process of input use in order to allocate a larger share of inputs from these member countries in order to fully gain preferential access to these markets. So I think that at least in the short run, the potential gains or orientation of UK firms to a more Asia-Pacific strategy will take years. And also given that we are not only integrated in terms of supply chain with the European Union, but also with the United States, well, maybe politics is not my background, but maybe I expect that the UK government will try to secure preferential trade with the US, which accounts for a great share of the UK exports and also for a share in the integration of the supply chain of UK firms.
Rob, is the UK going to benefit from the Asia century, as economists like to call it? What's your view on the impact which our membership of CPTPP will have in general in the years to come?
So I think there's two main impacts I'm going to be looking for from our CPTPP accession over the next 10 years or so. First, for it to be benefiting UK businesses, because that's one of the main reasons that we're in this game of trade negotiations, by giving them better or more certain access to CPTPP markets and enabling them to use the agreement to their benefit. And I think we can't predict now how businesses might react to the new opportunities that are opened up through having closer links to these markets, through the rules of origin provisions and the full accumulation that Manuel talked about that will be available in terms of being able to use inputs from across CPTPP markets into their products. So I really hope that we'll see UK businesses benefiting. And secondly, I want to see it continuing to play a really important role, CPTPP playing a really important role, representing a bulwark against trade fragmentation and unwarranted protectionism. And I think it really is and can continue to be a platform for supporting the wider rules-based international system.
Minika, would you agree with that assessment?
Yes, and I agree with Rob on many aspects. What I'd like to emphasize, it's not the UK which will be changed by the CPTPP, but the UK will facilitate the CPTPP to become Asia-Pacific and beyond. And I think the role of the UK is more important to shape the global trade through the CPTPP. The reason I said this is the CPTPP for coming 10 years, for decades, will be shaped by technology and security and environment change. So that's climate change. So these three factors will shape the CPTPP, try to retain the open and rule-based trading system as a value of the CPTPP inside a member is going to be very important. And I think, well, that it really depends on the UK's domestic political and then also public opinion, which shape the relation with the EU, not the CPTPP.
That's a very interesting comment on which to end, because there we have to wrap up our podcast. So many thanks indeed to my guests, to Minika Marita Jaeger, to Rob Cook, and to Manuel Tong, a splendid review of the question of CPTPP and the UK's imminent accession to it. And thank you very much to all of you for tuning in. Great to have you with us. Please do join us again soon for another episode of Trade Bites. Trade Bites is brought to you by the Centre for Inclusive Trade Policy, supported by the Economic and Social Research Council.